Welcome to the Daily French Show, offering insightful and thought-provoking news commentary and analysis from a classically liberal centrist perspective. The show is brought to you by the Institute of Race Relations. Tune in every Monday to Thursday for engaging discussions from our team of analysts and researchers that you won't find anywhere else.
Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to another week of the Daily French Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and I'm joined today by Ms. Sarah Gom. Sarah, how are you?
Thank you. Well, Nick?
I'm very well, thank you. And Mr. Terence Corrigan. Terence, how are you?
Always surprised at what South Africa throws up. Never a dull moment.
Indeed, indeed. I'm here to tell you that tomorrow there will not be a show, as it is Freedom Day, and I will say something about that at the very end of the show. But let us get right into this with the story of the day. And you may see from the title what exactly is this about, or you may know the story already, but it's very – we have to talk about it because it's very strange. Tokyo Sekwale is a famous character in South Africa's history. Over the past couple of years, he's always been sort of in the ANC's orbit, I believe. He started his political career as Chris Hani's bodyguard. Somewhere around something like that. He's become very rich and successful, but recently he came forward in an interview to, I think it was ETV, with some very strange allegations. Now, I'm going to admit that I don't truly understand the details here, and I guess that is some of the story here. But Sekwale alleges that there was some sort of fund set up by people across Africa who were going to all contribute to this thing, and it was going to fund students or something after COVID was over. He said that they created this fund, which was going to be used by all African governments, including Indian Ocean Island countries, for individual philanthropic and humanitarian work at an interest rate of less than 2%. Sekwale went on to kind of say that this money, though, had been stolen. After being placed in this trust, which he was supposed to be in charge of, and that he had been talking to Zuma and Cyril Ramaphosa about this trust. It's all kind of a bit confusing and a little bit difficult to follow, but then it gets a bit weirder when he goes on. He submitted a report to the police, a case to the police, claiming that this theft had taken place. And the amounts he's talking about being stolen are very strange. In the second case, this is quoting from what the police said. In the second case, the same complainant states that he was appointed by the presidency through the DPSA on 6 May 2013. In this case, he reports in his 213-page document the allegations of money laundering, fraud, and theft under false pretenses, high treason, and racketeering. The amount lost is recorded as 41 quadrillion, 313 billion 104 million rand only.
Now, well, it could have been in 5 rand. I mean,
so
5 cents.
The theft includes the alleged money stolen from former leader Gaddafi, which was investigated and found to be untrue, said the police. Now, I think that this amount is something like several times the amount that the entire world produces in 1 year. I think the entire GDP of the planet is about $80 trillion a year. So, you know, that's a couple hundred trillion rand. Sarah, what is going on here?
Well, as I understand it, and I say this circumspectly, what Sekwale was complaining is that the money essentially had gone into the Reserve Bank and hadn't come out the other end. And the Reserve Bank said, no, they didn't have the money. It wasn't, you know, with them. It wasn't meant to be with them.
Finance Minister Tito Mboweni tweeted out that Sekwale had fallen for some sort of scam, I believe.
Yeah. You know, just kind of an internet scam. Now, I mean, crikey, we've all had the Nigerian 219. I don't think it was one of those, but, you know, this is one hell of a scam. It's so weird. The amount is weird. And Sekhwali, you know, you say he started off his life as Chris Hani's bodyguard. Well, Sekhwali is probably your archetype's archetype of being a beneficiary of BEE. I mean, I don't think that the money he made, and he seems to have made a huge amount of it. I think it was a lot of it was made through companies and people that it wasn't him. Let's put it that way. So, what this? I mean, why would he go to Zuma? I mean, maybe if it concerns the Libyan millions that Zuma is supposed to have, put aside somewhere. It just is. It's balmy.
Right. Actually, this whole idea of the Libyan Gaddafi's millions is quite an interesting one, because I believe I've read somewhere that Muammar Gaddafi, when he was killed by rebel forces in the overthrow of his regime, that he was actually secretly one of the world's richest people, if not the world's richest person. But this was not widely known because he had stuffed the money away in many places. And I believe it's long been suspected that some in the ANC may have participated in stealing some of this money. Now, this is it's never, I think, been proven by anyone, but this is a story that's gone out there because we had fairly close ties with Gaddafi. Terence, what do you make of this whole story, and where do you think the Gaddafi millions went, or billions?
You know, I must say I'm getting rather concerned about that advance fee I paid to that nice Mr. Abacha in Toronto, who's apparently identified me as a beneficiary of, someone who died in a plane crash and I'm overreported. this does make me suspect that this good Christian man, you know, may not be all he says. But seriously, if something is just too bizarre to be true, then the odds are it probably is. There's all sorts of conspiracy theories. I remember one that was doing the rounds when I was at school, where the sort of end of the world theology was really caught on through a number of charismatic churches. That the Catholic Church, which was really was going to produce the Antichrist, was preparing for this massive persecution of all Protestants, and there's a supercomputer in the Vatican with the name, identity, like ID number and address of every Protestant in the world. Just stop and think for a moment. Is that even remotely possible? Anyone who's watched Oliver Stone's JFK, can't help but come away with a line that, you can't keep a secret amongst five people in this room. How are you going to keep things going between the mob and the CIA? You're going to have like, 41 quadrillion rand coming in. If nothing else, it just provides a sense of how debased our level of political debate is that this even registers. But also, I think perhaps a warning about the hazards of social media, that someone can put this onto Twitter and becomes, as that horrible colloquialism goes, a thing. What's going on? Nothing. I think this is all some sort of hoax. As for where the Gaddafi millions went, I don't know. He was assuming all this money existed. Must remember that it's unlikely to be in a big chest, or in a vault somewhere where Scrooge McDuck can go and swim around in all the gold coins. It's probably been put into front companies and invested in property and whatever. So the money itself, money as money, may well not exist. There may be all sorts of dispersed investments around the world, and I imagine that someone like Gaddafi wasn't stupid. The other option is that it may well have been frittered away. There's all sorts of stories about, you know, pirate treasure, but apparently no pirate treasure has ever been discovered. And according to something I read some years ago, that's because anybody who knows about the lifestyles of people who engage in this knew that they were essentially living hand to mouth and would blow it all on prostitutes and rum when they got back to Port Royal. A couple, such as, you know, Captain Morgan, you know, invested into political power and, you know, ended up going respectable. But the idea that you got to bury it on a beach somewhere where X marks the spot, that's an innovation of Robert Louis Stevenson, and perhaps Tokyo Sekwale is the South African equivalent.
Right, I'm actually reminded when you talk about pirates burning through money all the time. I'm reminded, of course, of Jacob Zuma, who, despite, you know, being accused of being involved in this complex web of corruption and patronage and all that, and having the Gupta family paying money into his accounts, all these accusations, he still seems to be broke all the time. And I think that there may perhaps be a similar phenomenon at play here, although I don't think Zuma spends his money on booze.
You know,
I believe he's a teetotaler.
If I can just comment on that, if you read that book Indentured by a former employee of the Gupta's TV channel, what comes across there is the sort of utter contempt they had for South Africans, whether it was their employees or whether it was the political leadership. The idea that you can, you know, buy these guys off with a pizza or, you know, with a thousand rand, when the real going value of this was a lot greater if you know, these guys didn't know how to do bribery properly. There were stories around Jackie Celebi about, you know, being given paper envelopes, you know, 1,000 rand here, 1,000 rand there. This is the chief of police. You know, if he knew what he was doing, he would have feathered his nest much more lucratively.
Right.
But you know, it's tacky. It's brazen enough to be damaging, but, you know, it's not sophisticated enough to confer any kind of greased wheels advantage to the country.
Right. No, exactly. Anyway, I think this whole affair, to kind of sum it up, is a bit sort of awkward and embarrassing for the ANC, because, of course, Tokyo Sekwale was a pretty senior figure in the party at one stage. He was the Minister of Human Settlements from 2009 to 2013. And he was also the ANC's first premier of Gauteng between 1994 and 1998. So to come out with these completely bizarre and frankly impossible stories and allegations, I think is a very strange direction for him to go in. Anyway, any final thoughts, Sarah, before we move on?
He was also a reality TV star, remember?
You are dismissed. That's right, he was.
Prince of South Africa.
No, I have no final thoughts other than to say that the next conspiracy theory a la Terence's School Days will not have the Protestants as victims.
Probably not, no. Anyway, let us move on to the next story. And speaking of strange dealings with people overseas, Water and Sanitation Minister Lindiwe Sisulu has on Saturday called on South Africans to embrace the Cuban engineers who have come to help resolve the country's water infrastructure problems. South Africa has imported 24 engineers from Cuba to transfer skills and knowledge and to assist the government's efforts on water delivery. Minister Sisulu expressed confidence in the engineers who are in the country for the next 3 years, saying Cuba faced similar challenges to South Africa relating to water and sanitation and has managed to overcome these issues. The department's Sputnik Ratao, who is the spokesperson for the department, said this is so that we can ultimately achieve our ideal of getting our infrastructure up to speed, as well as ensuring that we can still continue to engage and work together with other countries on many different fronts. And this is not just about the Cubans, but also about creating and forging partnerships with our own local compatriots. Sarah, your thoughts on our dealings with Cuba in this instance?
I think she's talking complete nonsense. She says that the engineers have had specialities in areas that South African engineers did not. Then she said that South Africans could do the same work, but that South Africans needed to be employed. Now, by all accounts, they're not employing the Cubans. That's how you get around the labor laws in the country. You say you're not employing them. They're just obtaining a stipend, and the rest goes to back home because it's a, you know, they export expertise. But she said the whole thing is based on fraternal relations as opposed to a contractual relationship. Now, what this is an ANC mired or pickled in the aspect of a ideology that is out of date, doesn't work, and their friends practice that ideology that's out of date and doesn't work. And Cuba is poor, misbegotten, and its water is infrastructure is in a terrible situation. So why the hell we are borrowing engineers from Cuba is quite a mystery. Now, you've had feedback from the industry. The Engineering Council of South Africa has said that the engineers actually have to be registered with the council because they have to be held accountable for shoddy work. And Cuba is not a member of an international alliance of engineering NGOs, so therefore it needs to be specially accredited by South Africa. The Water Engineering Division Chair of the SA Institute of Civil Engineering says that many engineers have been retrenched, especially under COVID. He says, we engaged government last year when we heard the Cubans were coming to South Africa. We were asked to provide a list of unemployed engineers, and we provided over 800 names. Most were young black graduates. Sisulu's department denied receiving the list. The Water Institute of South Africa said that they presented a list of 230 unemployed engineers and water specialists, and the Consulting Engineers South Africa CEO said that 20% of South Africa's engineers were underutilized, and the number was growing. They have a database of 400 unemployed, highly skilled engineers, and the reduction in capacity utilization begs the question as to why the government is importing foreign skills. And as one of the gentlemen said, they're happy to resubmit the list. And the last group who did this is Solidarity. They've put forward a list of 120 odd engineers. So, I mean, it suggests that there is absolutely the tackling the water crisis in South Africa is not uppermost in the ANC's mind. Helping South African experts is not in the uppermost in the minds, and doing anything good for the country is not in the uppermost mind. They are giving the Cubans money that they desperately need because they don't have much in the way of income. The only source is tourism, which will have been hit hard. And so, and the other source is hiring out professionals and usually doctors. So, the water department continues to be run in the most disgraceful way, as far as I'm concerned.
Right, and this actually reminds me of a story I was told today about a particular project to also, you know, it's create service delivery successes and spread skills and whatever. In the Free State, which was organized by former Premier Ace Makashula, who brought over a number of Cuban experts to the municipality. There was millions of rands spent. They gave them, they spent 250,000 rand, for example, on teaching the engineers Sotho and English. And in the end, they basically didn't use them. And in fact, most of the salaries of these engineers was apparently paid to the Cuban government, not to the engineers themselves. And the engineers were complaining that they were just sitting around doing nothing. And this is a similar story. We just keep hearing this over and over again whenever South African government seems to contract out to Cubans. But Terence, to me, it seems a lot from the way this Sara has described the story. Oh, and the questions about they were asked by the DA who managed to find it out. So that was a pretty good work for them by them. But Terence, what strikes me about this story is it kind of seems like the ANC government is pushing aside young black engineers in favor of its Cuban allies. Is that an unfair characterization of the story?
I don't think so. Look, I think fundamentally what you're talking about here is how can South Africa how can South Africa provide aid to Cuba? I think this is at base. South Africa's trade with Cuba is negligible. I think we have a bigger trading relationship with Belize. Can anyone find Belize on a map in South Africa? I think the only exposure to Belize that would happen is if you watch BBC, and I think there was an episode of the World's Strictest Parents, which was set in Belize. Seemed like a nice family, by the way. For all the noise around Cuba, the sort of biggest items of that we get from them are tobacco or old tobacco, Cuban cigars, and rum. And then there's some pharmaceuticals or whatever, but it's interesting. About 80% of our trade would have been cancelled with the lockdown because all of the stuff suddenly became illicit. Cuba doesn't buy a huge amount from us. What we have to offer, they can get elsewhere, and they don't have much money to spend. What they do have is a sort of doe-eyed admiration society in South Africa. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you want to be cooperating, but there's just realities don't allow for much of that. So we hop on board with the skills, and it's something that, you know, everyone kind of accepts we have a skills problem. The Cuban doctors and the Cuban medical training, I could justify that up to a point. It's a very opaque system, but from what I can see, the way it operates in South Africa is not as abusive as it was in Venezuela. Apparently, they were actually paid directly. It's not clear whether that's going to be the case with these guys who came in under COVID. As far as the engineering thing goes, though, it's just ridiculous. Cuba, you know, has not solved its water problems. I mean, like 50% of Cuba's water, according to some drinking water, goes missing. Its system is antiquated. This was raised a while ago about why we need Cuban help, because we've also got old infrastructure, and, you know, the Cubans know how to work with old stuff. Maybe they do, but it's not working out that well in Cuba. There was a report in the New York Times. I know there'll be all sorts of howls of imperialism, but it was written by a Dutch journalist who seemed to actually have a lot of sympathy with Cuba, saying that there are parts of the country which have water for sort of 2 hours every 5 days. Mm-hmm. They use those JoJo cans on top of their roofs to store when they do have. To keep out mosquito larvae, they put fish in. Now, this is all, this stuff is actually all quite innovative. And, you know, as far as embracing the Cubans, you know, if you give me a Cuban, I'll embrace them. I don't mind. I've heard some great things about some of these Cuban doctors. Apparently, one guy came in. He reckoned, you know, finally he was going to he was going to play golf for 2 years because, you know, he couldn't do this in Havana, and this is what the rich American doctors do. So, you know, he had his clubs and he was off. I think we have those skills, as, you know, these various bodies have shown. Money doesn't seem to be the problem. Apparently, it's what, like 25 engineers they're talking about, and the budget is something like 64 million. Yeah, now my maths was never that good, but that's like about 3 million a pop. I think you could hire some fairly significant experience with that. In fact, you might be able to get, you know, two South Africans with the price of one Cuban. But, you know, as I say, I think that whatever benefit we might get is offset by the price tag, and I don't think that benefit is, you know, actually. It's the form, not the substance that the government wants. I think they have a lot of trouble explaining, you know, even to many of their core voters who probably have a great deal of some affection for Cuba, that we're giving the Cubans 64 million bucks, you know, while we can't, you know, pay you your, you know, COVID grant. However, if we can say, well, this is all about development, you've got some fig leaf to hide behind, but it is a fig leaf.
Yeah, no, it's just completely crazy that we seem to basically be participating in what is money laundering by the Cuban government. Anyway, I'm sure.
And labor broking, probably.
And labor broking as well, of course, for all the vaunted communistic ideals. It really seems like the workers are getting screwed here. So anyway, let us go on to the next story for today, our last story for today. Very briefly, of course, many people have been following around the world the trial of Derek Chauvin for the murder of George Floyd in the United States in the city of Minneapolis. But what some people may not know is that there was an area of Minneapolis on the corner of 38th Street and Chicago Avenue, which has many black-owned businesses. This area was renamed to George Floyd Square after his death. However, some business owners in this area have said that since the killing of George Floyd, the police have largely abandoned this intersection. And now it has created what has been described as a hazardous autonomous zone in which gangs and political activists hold sway. Some of these businesses created a GoFundMe campaign, which is called Support Black Business Owners at 38th and Chicago. And said that one of the successful black businesses in the area had seen its revenue plunge by 75% since the killing and the drama that followed with it. So I've got the page for it open now. They're asking for $400,000, I think, to keep them afloat. And they've currently only raised about $13,000. So it seems like the Defund the Police movement, Terrence, is running into some difficulties with reality.
Well, yeah, if you read the appeal that they make now, I think they've chosen their words carefully, but that certainly seems to be their problem, that the place has become lawless. It's become essentially a kind of autonomous zone. Minneapolis has talked about defunding the police, although it apparently hasn't fully gone down that route yet. But still, these ideas are popular current, and they've gone into the administration thinking. What these business people seem to be saying is that now they've kind of been left alone to carry the can. You have a combination of leftist militants who probably hate them for being capitalists, and people of lax moral probity who have guns who just
take advantage of the situation.
So you end up throwing under the bus people, that this movement is nominally supposed to be supposed to care about. This I think raises an issue that we see so often, the ideological overreach. What may sound attractive in the abstract, or what may be good for a professional agitator, is perhaps not that great for people who actually have to live with the consequences. Right. We've talked about this idea of defunding the police before, and the question that always sticks with me is, all right, there may be an argument for more money into rehabilitation or whatever, but at the end of the day, someone like smashing into your apartment wielding an axe, you probably don't want to call a social worker. You probably want to call a cop. And I think this is essentially what they're saying. And I think mentioning those numbers is very revealing, because this page has been going on for over a month. And for all the concern about the community, and that's a word that kept on popping up, throughout all these protests, the community, this organic hive of people who live together and take care of each other and whatever. Well, it doesn't seem to be that much concern for this particular part of the community.
Right. The founders of the Black Lives Matter Global Network, who have recently bought multi-million dollar houses. That money might have been better spent if it was instead given to these business owners. It seems like the story is very similar to the last one. You have a bunch of ideologues who are supposedly fighting for the dignity and well-being of black people, instead damaging the lives of black people around the world. Anyway, we are going to have to call it to a close there. There won't be a show tomorrow because tomorrow is, of course, Freedom Day. Now, I know some people in South Africa, when they hear Freedom Day, especially, you know, on this show, we cover so much bad news, they sort of roll their eyes and go, ah, Freedom Day, what's that? And I will say that I think we should still be grateful for the freedom that we do have. We're able to have a show like this, and riot police are not going to break down the door and drag us away in chains, which is not something that you can say in very many other countries around the world. And I think that's something that's very precious. So as long as we hold on to that freedom, we're going to be in a much better place than many other places, like China, for example. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you soon on Wednesday, and we hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks, everyone. Cheers.